CBA Mobile. CBA KO4LAO. How are you this morning, David?
I'm wore out. I tell you, I've been playing tennis. I'm already tired.
YL sitting here listening to us both. She was a big tennis player in high school.
Better get out here and let's hit some of those round fuzzy balls.
Good at it.
She probably still is. She just needs to put a racket in her hand.
Her racket's about half the size of what they play with today.
They make stores and internet for us. Yeah, I had a Jack Kramer autograph back in the day. I can remember when I was a teenager, I bought that thing. Unstrung, it was $14 back in the 70s, and that was a ton of money for a teenager. Let me tell you, I thought I had just gone way overboard in spending, and then I had to pay to have it strung.
You sit it all summer for a wooden Davis and then had to have it custom strung.
Nilsson Ultra 108, and it's a hybrid. And first time I heard about hybrids, I kind of turned my nose at that. I thought, you know, that's just a little overkill or too much or something. I mean, you know, what's the big deal? But one night I forgot to bring my racket, and I forgot about the game. And they called me up and said, hey, where are you? So I had to go rushing over to the sports club. And I had tennis shoes on, but I had street clothes on. I didn't have anything. And this guy had, deal with Tennis Express, where you get three rackets and you demo them. And he said, "Here, I got some demos. Try this one." And he handed me the racket that I'm using now, and it had a smaller grip, but I used it, and man, I hit the ball so much better. It was amazing.
A story about being in a professional tennis tournament as a ball girl in the Virginia Slims, match is over.
And I was in a scratchy place on Orchard Park Drive.
Yeah, she had done, you remember the Virginia Slims matches, she had been a ball girl in one of those matches.
Nate, wow. Did she get any free cigarettes?
The tennis didn't go together very well.
I was just kidding. Oh, man. I played one tournament, that was last year. In fact, they just had the one this year in June. Same place down in Sumter, and we made it to the state finals. We lost in the state finals, but we made it to the finals at least. And in my book, that was an accomplishment. I'm an average player, you know, nothing to jump up and down about. We usually get a particular court, and next to us, same group of guys, we're all playing doubles. Same group of guys get the court next to us, and they're 4-0s, and we're all 3-0s, and you can tell the difference, and a marked difference in, you know, the way they hit the ball and the way they play at the net. Sometimes they're just back and forth at the net. The ball didn't even touch the ground, you know, for they might hit it five or six times before somebody gets a point off the, you know, playing off the net there.
Good at that stuff. She used to run me around the court and get frustrated with the fact that I couldn't even get close to the ball.
Well, I always enjoyed when my wife was able, I enjoyed hitting with her, because that's what she would do. She'd run me all over the court because she couldn't hit the ball back to me, I mean, even if she tried. And so I got a lot of exercise, and I would hit it right back to her so she didn't have to run for it. And but her joints are so bad now that, you know, she could possibly get out there and do it. Of course, right now she's recovering from Achilles heel surgery and bone spurs and all that junk. They had to go in there. It was real extensive, and it's a long recovery. It's like 8 weeks. And I think we're in about 6 week now, so she's getting there.
Hey, remind me, what is the meeting night for the South Carolina DX Association again?
All right, I'm thinking, it's the third Thursday. Oh, gosh, is it Thursday or Tuesday? Yikes. Let me think a second. The smoke coming out of my ears right now because I'm thinking. I believe there might be somebody on here that can correct me if I'm wrong. I know it's the third, the third Tuesday or third Thursday. I think it's the third Thursday of every month at Mythos.
I think I was thinking it was on a Thursday. I just couldn't remember when, but I need to get back to a meeting. But Ariel and I are still doing CW practice pretty regular in the morning.
Now, you would think I would have kept that going. I kind of wish I had, but being a musician, they say it's a little easier to pick up, but I don't know. I don't seem to have trouble with it. And back, you know, when I got my ticket, you had to learn 5 words a minute when I got my novice, and that was back in 82. But, you know, since then, they did away with it, and when they changed all the rules, I grandfathered into the general class, so. but I need to get my extra, and so that's... I guess that's something to work on in the future. But anyway, what was I going to tell you? I don't even know now. But anyway, go ahead. This is KB4CPA.
Hey, KO4LAO. David, I joined the Greer Amateur Radio Society, and they were telling me they've got some really good videos online for your extra class ticket, which is what I need to do as well.
Watching the ones that Gary and Dave put up, and I think Tom's involved with at least one of them. But anyway, and they're on YouTube. Whiskey 4 Echo Yankee, and and then I also watch the, they recommend watching Dave Kassler videos. It's the same thing. It's just, he just presents it a little differently. You get a little extra there, and might help you understand things a little better, that kind of thing. I really struggled. I sat through the class before COVID, and I really struggled with it. I'm just not, you know, even though I worked on cars and I was good with schematics and, you know, doing electrical problems, I just don't get some of this stuff. it's just over my head.
Jump into that. I need to get my extra class ticket out of the way. I just finished all the stuff for CW Academy and going into an advanced class. But that's free. If you want to get back into CW, just sign up for a CW Academy class, and they've got a test you can take, and it'll kind of help you figure out where you are. But the classes meet twice a week, and they're pretty good. They usually do a great job. Over.
I I'll tell you where I'm at. I'm at the beginning. The very beginning. I'm talking about chapter one, you know, the first sentence. This is the letter A. Anyway, I don't know how they go about teaching Morse code. I just learned, you know, the dits, ahs, and da-dits and all that, but for each letter, and they say that, you know, to really pick up some speed, you've got to listen for words and not just copy letters.
A little more than a year ago, I was right there, airy beginning, and I remember the second class I took with him, the instructor said, okay, give me some B's so we can test out and see if I can hear you okay, and I had to go look up and see what a B was.
Remember a B and a V because, you know, Beethoven's fifth is the same, the first four notes is, you know, like da. So that's the way it starts off. I'm not going to sing it because you're not supposed to do that over there. But anyway, and a B is the opposite of that, I think. If I'm remembering correctly, it's da, did, did, did. So anyway, so I can remember those two, and I can remember a few more. But I can spell my name, but I forgot the numbers and. You know, it's just, I don't know. Golly, it would be like starting a new hobby. I've just got too many irons in the fire.
Fine, it's a good one to start with, and it's all free, and it's just people trying to get folks to come back to CW or try it and for the first time. And I bet it'd come back to you pretty quick. Well, listen, I'm going to have to say 73 to you. I'm here at my destination, and hope you have a great afternoon and a good weekend, and maybe I'll see you at the South Carolina DX meeting here pretty soon.
Being there, if nothing happens, nothing comes up, because I'm retired. I'm the only thing I'm doing is ham radio and a lot of tennis, so... So anyway, you have a good one. Yeah, I'm sitting in the about halfway in the garage here, so I'm going to pull on in myself. Have a good one. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. We'll talk to you later. 73's KB4CBA.
Hey, this is Jim, KO4LAO, and I'll talk to you next time around, 73.
KO4RHF, 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 KWW.
WWN, this is KO4RHF, I got you.
Yeah, I'm having to cheat and use the Echo Link connection. I can't hit the repeater. Why don't you go ahead and move over to 146.52, and we'll try to pick you up there. Come on.
Roger that. We'll change frequencies. KO4RHF clear. WWN is KOR. RFA.
DJW Mobile.
WK4CHY start or date.
Out here, rolling down the road. How are you?
In the middle of RC test flights latest video when when you shout it out.
Is the video?
A lot of ground effects vehicles lately. So, yeah, this one was another design of that. Interesting stuff.
Oh, RC test flight. Yeah, I've seen that new ground effects one that he built. When it was 2 weeks old, I get notifications. And I got a notification, and I ignored the first one, and I got a second one later and went out there and watched it. That's pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. The tools that he's using nowadays, too, or that CNC router that he's got, that's to build those wings, those airfoils, that's a lot nicer tools than he used to have. I remember when he first started that, he was cutting everything out of foam with an X-Acto knife.
I'd love to have one of those myself, being, you know, the industry that we were in. So, but yeah, this one is, it's all just like 6mm Defron. He just kind of mocked it up real quick and got it out there on the water, and it does really good. Yeah, he was working with trying to keep it from flying and only flying ground effects. So, yeah, this is, I don't know, probably 3 or 4 iterations in of different things he's tried doing ground effects stuff.
Hard thing to do. I was thinking about those really monstrous ground effects vehicles, the ones that, you know, carry tons and tons and tons of weight. They're dampened a lot more than his is. His is so lightweight, it can just pop up. How you prevent that? I guess you could do that with some special programming on Ardu Pilot, so that if it ever went, you know, too high, you would bring it back down. But that's not real. That's really cheating. He wants it to be designed so that it can't pop up more than, I think it's half the wingspan high. So if it's a 3-foot wingspan, the highest it could ever fly would be a foot and a half.
Using a controller to keep the nose down on it, but he really has to, like, do full up elevator to get it to nose up and actually get off the water, and as soon as he lets go of the elevator, it's back down on plane.
Flying float airplanes. One of the ones that I had, the center hole was a float, and then it had 2 pontoons, one out on each wingtip. And getting it to break, I mean, you could, when the water was really glassy smooth, you could go full throttle across the water, and it wouldn't break. It wouldn't get up on the step so that it could get off of the water. You'd have to twist your ailerons, twist the hull, or wiggle the rudder, or do something to get it to break loose of that surface tension. So he's got a hard row to hoe right there. That's not easy to do.
He kind of midway through this one did another little step to try to, he's got basically a asymmetric wedge using the bottom of it for ground effect stuff, and then he uses the top of it to cancel out the tendency to want to take off. So, and then he put a cone in the back, but he found that he needed a step back there on the back where it ends at to keep the flow off of the back cone. Okay.
Kind of the modifications, and he also took that under camber out of the wing, put a flat bottom wing on it, right?
See what he's done. Had a Defron, I think he released this video like yesterday, I believe.
I haven't seen that one yet, then. So, is he making any headway without cheating? Because that's, he knows how to do it cheating. He wants to do it without cheating.
Kind of the further iteration of that concept. Yeah, it does really good. It's still got some things he's pretty impressive.
Where he, where his buddy that helped him do the long cross country flight that he drove for him, but that guy is a software engineer and he writes software like Ardu Pilot.
I realize that. I must admit, I love his buddy that does the stupid songs. So.
It does kind of grow on you after a while. At first, I was like, what in the world is this? But I guess it grows on you after a while.
I had the same reaction. It's like, what in the world is going on? And then the later ones, it's just, I can't believe he worked that in there.
He's
doing that more and more now, too. Trying to help his buddy get off the ground.
I didn't have one in this video, and I was kind of surprised because it was right for one, but I guess he had more technical content he wanted to cover.
Looking for a company now that does cinematography, and he's from one of the pilots, or he helps set up the hardware for those scenes that they make for the movies. But that's pretty good. He's flying RC airplanes, he turns it into making a living. That's pretty cool. He'll never work a day in his life.
That, and I mean, he puts a lot of engineering into this stuff, and yeah, it's kind of one of my favorite RC-related channels to watch.
Do those engineering sites that he promotes?
Not really.
I think it would be good. I mean, if you're wondering how to do something, but how you correlate that with which lesson you want to take is beyond me. But I think it would probably help because he's shown, you know, those blurbs about it. And I usually watch for, because it doesn't take long to go by. And it helps if you're doing some, like, complex trig and you want to use calculus instead of trig because calculus is a lot shorter and a lot faster. It shows you how to do that. And, you know, that's a big help.
I could probably stand to do some of that. I never had calculus courses and did real good in algebra and you know, used trig basically every day. But yeah, never got into calculus, so I could definitely benefit from that.
Michelin, I use trig every single day. And some calculus, not as much calculus as trig, but some. But sometimes they have mathematical experts there that could help you out with stuff like that you're trying to figure out. So if it was beyond me, I'd go pull one of those guys up. And they'd figure it out, and they'd show it, and they'd explain it to me. I'd say, yeah, give me my variables. And they'd do it. It worked really, really good. So calculus can really help, but you got to be a mathematician to get it.
4CHY, yeah, roger that. Yeah, we run into a little bit of it with, you know, materials and stuff. And, yeah, it's pretty daunting for me, but we usually work through it. And same way, we've got some people around and even in sister facilities that you can shoot them a question. And, you know, they'll get you through it.
I'm starting to do that a lot more now. Then when I was, like, working at the bank, you don't need calculus or trig. You need simple mathematics and very little of that, really. I mean, from time to time, it gets a little complex on some of the routines that they have, but nothing like trying to figure out geometry.
I always kind of gravitated towards the geometry stuff, too. I guess that's why I fell into the field that I'm in or was in.
My geometry class, I thought I could never have a mathematical class that was better than geometry until I took trig. And that's like geometry on steroids.
Bad experience on geometry class, but yeah, I pretty much excelled in trig. And you know, I did early drafting too, so just geometric construction in general I was real familiar with, so it kind of all falls into place like that.
Taking my tests because I wanted to go to Colorado Springs for officer training for flying to go to flight school, and I got the governor to recommend me, and I took, you know, all my tests, and I passed my tests. And one of those tests, I remember, they folded up cardboard boxes of all kinds of weird shapes, and you had to mentally unfold them, and then you had to pick out the unfolded one from a group of them. And I aced that. In your brain, how you manipulate something that's not real in your brain, I always found that really intriguing. And that was one of the really, really good tests that I took that I really enjoyed.
Reminds me, there was a lot of stuff like that on the Aspen, too. Yeah, I just breezed through that stuff. I loved it. to me, it was like kids' puzzle. And, yeah, it just always came naturally to me for some reason. And I know seeing people really struggle with it. Yeah, just, I guess, some people's brains definitely, the chemical reactions are going on differently than some others.
And it really handy, too. I remember back when I was flying competition airplanes, we would dive at the ground really fast because the clock stopped when your wheels touch the ground. You go up, do a maneuver or three, and then you touch the ground, and you go up and do it again and touch the ground. And you dive at the ground really fast, and then you slam on brakes. Now, how do you slam on brakes in the air? So there's several different ways to do it. You can, if the ailerons are on two separate servos, you can pump them both up. But when you pop them both up, it acts like a flying wing, and it's like a elevator, and the thing just goes up. I mean, you don't want it to go up. You just want it to slow down. So you compensate with that by giving a down elevator, which changes the up aileron from the flaperons, which are the ailerons. They effectively turn into flaperons. You compensate with that with down elevator. You got to get just the right amount so that you're coming down like 70 miles an hour. And on the last click of the throttle, the last click, you know, that's when everything kicks in and the ailerons go up and the elevator goes down. Programming all of that to make all that happen was a chore. But it's the same thing. You've got to figure all of that in your head. You got servos to go left and right. You got right servos and left servos, and you got to make sure that it goes the right direction, and the elevators likewise, and at the right place on the throttle. It's a lot to work out, but it's really, really fun when it all comes together, and you can dive at the ground at 70 miles an hour and slam on brakes, and it actually works.
That's pretty cool. Never thought of that. Not doing any competition type thing. I guess initial tweaking is at high altitudes to me that stuff doesn't come as fast as it does for some people. So yeah, I would probably reach it if I was too close to the ground.
Well, you try to expose the flat side of the wing, not the front leading edge, because the leading edge will cut through there really quick, even on a fat wing airplane. But when you rotate the airplane to where it exposes the underbelly of the wing, and that's what's hitting the air that is coming on, and that's like popping an umbrella open or a parachute. But you got to compensate at the same time with that so it doesn't shoot up in the air. You don't want it to shoot off on a different vector. You want it to stay on the same vector, but use this wing surface area as a parachute. And then, before you touch down, go back to flying again by getting that angle back right with the speed that you have so that you don't just crash into the earth. I had a blast doing that. That's how I spent hundreds of hours flying and tweaking and flying. The ability to do more tweaks. That's a lot of fun. I want to get back to that with flying, too, but I haven't been able to do that yet. W4DJW.
And how much of this was flying skills and how much of it is, in the flight controller or whatever?
See, that was the 70s and 80s. There wasn't any flight controllers for model aviation. They didn't exist. There were some things that, used gravity, like mercury switches that you could put in there, but they were generally for slow flying airplane to keep the wings level. If a big burst of wind came, like a mercury switch would say, hey, you lift it up on this end, maybe we want to let that aileron down on the other side to lift that wing up too, that kind of thing. But they were really crude compared to what's out there to do. So that was mostly, it's two skills, just flying skill and programming skill. You had to have both. One complemented the other. If you were out either one of them, it didn't work.
And this was on like Spectrums or what?
Well, Spectrum didn't exist back in that day. There was Kraft, Futaba, JR, and JR Propo. And that's what I had was the JR Propo. But Futaba had the capability, and some of the guys I competed with had Futaba, and they figured out how to get it to do that. The guys over in Raleigh, North Carolina really figured it out first, and then everybody kind of followed their – they figured out how to get a radio to do that. And then everybody knew that it was possible, so everybody just spent hours trying to figure out how to get their transmitter to do the same thing.
Always wanted the one of the Pajabas, but with the cheaper route. I can't remember the name of the company and how they're still around. I think they just do like mostly receivers, but they had a Challenger 7-channel that I had. It's kind of the Chinese equivalent today back then. I always wanted a Pajaba, and just the radios they got out now, you can program anything to anything and have it react to anything else. It's just amazing what you do with them nowadays.
I like the JR a lot, and I tried Pajaba when they came out with that 16-channel PCM radio, but it kept crashing airplanes. So even though I had a healthy investment in it, I had to go back to JR because, two or three crashes of something that you put 40 hours into to build, that hurts. It wasn't the money, it's the hours that it takes to build it.
And I cannot remember a thing like that. Company started with an A, and I can't remember what it was. But yeah, I do remember the JRs, and I guess Pajaba was the big name back in those days. And all those radios at the time, that was kind of like precursor in what we've got now. They were things to be really advanced and really quick.
It is JR. I think they bought JR out, so I think it's JR with a different name. But I think Horizon owns Spectrum, so now that would mean Horizon owns JR, and Horizon's in it for the money, not the prestige. So the quality has suffered tremendously. That's why I switched over to Free Sky, FR Sky, a lot of people call it. And they have the same... They're more focused on the quality and building themselves a name, and the price isn't so bad. Price isn't like Horizon. They only have one goal, and that's to make Horizon bigger and bigger and bigger. And you can see that in how cheap their equipment is. So I don't do Spectrums or any. Even though I had a lot of them, I got about 40 receivers that just sit in a drawer and never do anything anymore.
And I've not heard JR in a long time other than, like the module bays and stuff. But, it seemed like everything was is branded Spectrum, and like you said, with Horizon. And the radio I was talking about that I had was a high-tech 720 Challenger. It was a 7-channel. Kind of on the cheaper end of things back then, but it was a pretty nice radio, but it didn't have all the capabilities that something like a Pajaba would have.
I see them from time to time too, and they make some really nice radios, some nice gear as well. Some of the guys out there where we fly have those. Anyway, I got lunch and I am at home. We can go inside and eat. Enjoy the weekend. KN4CHY, W4DJW. I enjoyed it.
Good talking to you. Enjoy your lunch. V4DJW, KN4CHY, 73, have a good afternoon.